Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. And this one, in particular, I want to say thank you to Joyce, who actually mailed in a contribution. And we appreciate it. And we'll email access to our premium site, which we do with all donations of $7 or more. And if you'd like to donate by snail mail, just email me, box13@greatdetectives.net, because I know not everyone's comfortable with or is able to use PayPal. All right, well, now it's time to get into today's story from A Life in Your Hands, and there's actually no blank space between last week's story and this week's No Lost Episode, so let's enjoy Carl Fortune.
The National Broadcasting Company delays the start of this program to bring you a special bulletin. From the NBC newsroom in New York, North Korean communist troops have driven American forces back again in their first night attack of the war. The assault along the western sector of the Korean front pushed our troops farther than they had planned to withdraw, completely revising our defensive plan. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
You never know when you step from the safety of your home, when you may witness a violent death, and be called upon to testify as to what you saw and heard, and suddenly find yourself with a life in your hands. Murder is a dark enigma that strikes fear into the heart of man. Strange, baffling, mysterious. But the darkest crime one man can invent, another man can unravel. Such a man is Jonathan Keg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, the world's most popular writer of mysteries, creator of Perry Mason, Doug Selby, and many other outstanding characters. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jonathan Keg.
Any one of you may at any time be witness to a crime, and it will be very important that you recall accurately what you may see or hear. You can never tell when it may happen. Even now, somewhere in the city, there may be a crime in the making.
Don't you think you're driving a little fast, Carl?
I'm doing the driving.
What is it? Family again? I've got a right to know, Carl. After all, I'm your partner.
Look, Jim, I agreed to drive up here with you for the weekend just because you thought a little fishing might settle my nerves, in spite of the fact that my wife and mother-in-law are here and don't want to see me. Let's see if the fishing helps. Meantime, lay off.
If you fall apart, our whole business is shot. Has it got something to do with your mother-in-law?
Of course it's Ellen. Ever since Hazel and I have been married, she's been trying to break it up.
Well, I don't want to see anything happen between you and Hazel. But after all, Ellen has quite an interest in our firm.
Ellen wants to withdraw the money she advanced to me.
Oh, that would ruin us.
She has a 10-year contract with me, and it's still got 4 years to run. Nothing short of my death will let her get that money out.
She could make a lot of trouble.
She is making trouble. I tell you, Ellen is making Hazel hate me.
That isn't good.
When a husband and wife aren't husband and wife, it isn't good. And that's the way it is, thanks to Ellen. But I'm not through with that old witch yet. Here we are. Want to come in for a minute?
No, thanks. I'm going next door and air out the house. Then to the lodge for a steak. Join me?
Later, probably.
Drop by the lodge about 10.
Okay.
See you then. So long, Carl.
So long, Jim. Hazel? It's me.
Oh, hello, Carl. You got here sooner than I expected.
I didn't waste any time. Scared Jim half to death.
Oh? Jim come up with you?
Yeah, we're going fishing in the morning.
I see. Well, I'm glad to know why you came. I knew it wasn't to see me.
I see you're feeling normal today.
Please don't take that tone of voice with me.
Oh, for gosh sakes, Hazel, why do we have
Please,
to
Please, Carl.
What's going on in here? Oh, it's you. You're early.
So sorry.
Hazel, I won't be spoken to this way.
Oh, what can I do, Mother? Why did you have to sign that agreement letting his firm have all your money for 10 years?
As I recall, I wasn't going to do it until you urged me. I did it for you, Hazel. I've always done everything in the world for you. You know that.
Oh, I know, Mother. Oh, I don't know what I was thinking of when I married you.
Well, that's a nice wifely remark.
I mean it.
Congratulations, Ellen. You've done it. You've been trying for 6 years to poison Hazel against me, and now you've done it.
What do you mean? I've tried to help.
Oh, but... sure, you've always tried to help.
Oh, why must I be abused this way?
Carl, apologize to Mother this instant.
I'm not going to apologize to anyone. I'm through. I've had more than any man should have to take.
You mean you're leaving?
They give you an excuse to sue me for divorce and get alimony, not on your life. But if I have any more trouble with either one of you, I'm going to sue Ellen for alienation of affection.
Oh.
I'll take every penny you've got, both of you, before you're rid of me.
Smokers, it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premium. There are over 75 beautiful premiums, and you can get them just like gifts. Just smoke Raleigh's and save the profit-sharing coupons. And remember,
a recent decision by the Federal Trade Commission, an agency of the United States government, should prove to you,
you cannot believe in throat tests.
You cannot believe in nose tests.
But you can believe your own eyes. So take the Raleigh eye test and see for yourself the only real important difference between leading brands of cigarettes. A difference you can believe because it's a difference you can see. The Raleigh Profit Sharing Premium Coupon.
Carl, I've been looking all over for you. It's almost midnight. What have you been up to?
What's it look like?
Looks like you've been drowning your troubles. Well, keep drinking and you won't want to go fishing in the morning.
Sure, I will. Anything to get out of that house.
Pretty bad, huh?
She's finally done it, Jim. She's turned Hazel against me. Completely.
What about the firm? What'll this do if you and Hazel get a divorce?
No divorce. I'm sticking around. They're not going to hook me for alimony.
Don't be too sure of that. If this thing gets to court, Hazel might not only get alimony, but that agreement between you and your mother-in-law could be set aside.
Oh, stop being an old worrywart. It's not going to happen.
Well, it could if you don't take it easy.
Are you telling me how to run my life?
No, no, of course not. You're not in a very good mood for talking tonight, Carl. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 5. Good night.
Yeah, night. Phil, bring me another double martini.
George, I feel guilty enjoying the cool comfort of this porch. I think you and Mr. Keg should sleep out here on the porch and let me take the bedroom.
Oh, nonsense. I wouldn't hear of it. Hope Jonathan gets here soon.
Think you'll be long?
Oh, not very. If he left the city at 5, he should be here any minute. It's almost 1 o'clock.
I suppose you two are going fishing at the crack of dawn, and I won't get a chance to meet Jonathan Keg.
You'll have plenty of chance, dear.
That's what I like about being married to a judge. You meet the most interesting people. Oh, here comes a car now. Maybe that's Mr. Keg.
No, that's Carl Fortune coming home. In the usual condition, I'm afraid. Uh-oh. Sounds like Carl missed the garage slightly.
Sounded to me more like he didn't miss it.
Oh, honey. Let's listen and see if he makes it this time. Ah, that time he made it. Bully for him. Now, if he can just close his garage door.
I'm afraid the Fortunes have been having trouble lately.
Well, darling, between Carl's drinking and, what's her name? Hazel's mother?
Ellen Sisler.
Yeah. Well, the car's all tucked away. Yes, that Ellen. Believe me, she's no help.
Well, I hope Mr. K gets here soon. It's time to go to sleep.
Oh, you go ahead and turn in, dear. I'll wait for him. He won't be long now. Good night, dearest.
Good night, darling.
Yeah. Your car coming now. That's probably Jonathan. You go to sleep. We'll see you when we get back from fishing.
What is it?
Oh, sorry to waken you, Ellen. I came to pick up Carl to go fishing.
Oh, I guess he isn't up yet.
What is it, Mother?
Oh, Jim came to pick up Carl. You better rout him out.
Oh, I don't know where he is, Jim. He didn't come home last night.
Didn't come home, but I heard him.
So did I. He almost tore the garage down.
Well, I don't know. I took a sleeping pill. I didn't hear him, but I know he isn't in bed. The bed hasn't been slept in.
Maybe he slept in the car. Wouldn't put it past him.
He might have at that. He wasn't too happy when I saw him at the lodge last night. I'll take a look.
Oh, you can't get in that way. The door's locked. You'll have to come through the house. It's this way, through the kitchen. I suppose he was drinking at the lodge.
He'd had a few.
Was he talking? About Mother and me, I mean.
Take it easy. Hazel, Carl was upset last night.
Oh, he should have been. No one will ever know what that man has done to Hazel and me.
Oh, Mother, please. Here's the door to the garage.
Good Lord. The car motor's running. Get back. This place is loaded with carbon monoxide.
Thank goodness you're both back. The most terrible things happened. Carl Fortune's killed himself.
What? That's impossible.
Well, I just don't see how anyone could do a thing like that by accident. I think it's suicide, and I know a lot of people are glad he did it.
Really, Mrs. Holden? Maybe it might be a good idea if we all went to the coroner's inquest. It just might be that one of those people who's glad this fellow died sort of helped him along.
From the testimony we've heard, gentlemen of the jury, it seems pretty plain to me that Carl Fortune committed suicide. Mr. Keg asked me earlier if he could enter the case as amicus curiae. Do you still want to do that in the light of the testimony, Mr. Keg?
If that is agreeable with you, Mr. Coroner.
Perfectly, Mr. Keg. I'd like to tell my jury that an amicus curiae is a friend of the court. He helps the court find out exactly what happened, and he never acts for either the defendant or the prosecution. Would you like to ask some questions as an amicus curiae, Mr. Keg?
Yes, Mr. Coroner. Is there any doubt as to the cause of death?
None at all. His blood was loaded with carbon monoxide and alcohol.
Was there any other mark on the body?
No. He was found in an enclosed garage sitting in his car with the motor running. There was no question as to the cause of death.
I see. I'd like to call the wife of the deceased, Mrs. Hazel Fortune. Mrs. Fortune, did your husband drink a great deal?
He used to, then he stopped. But lately, we'd had some trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Well, I... Really, Mr. Keg, this has been very upsetting. Must I go into our personal life?
I'm afraid you must, Mrs. Fortune.
Well... When Carl and Jim started their brokerage business, my mother loaned Carl the money. Then they had a fight, Mother and Carl. She wanted her money back, and Carl wouldn't give it to her.
And you sided with your mother?
It was her money. She was entitled to it.
Did this estrange you from your husband?
You could hardly love a swindler.
That is how you considered him?
What else could I think?
You argued about this yesterday.
Yes. Yes, we did.
Was Carl depressed by the estrangement between you two?
Well, he seemed to be.
Depressed enough to kill himself?
I don't know.
Where were you between 12 and 2 last night?
In bed, asleep.
You didn't hear your husband come home?
No, I was nervous and upset. I took his sleeping pill about 10:30 and went right to sleep.
When did you wake him?
About 5, when Jim came to the door to get Carl to go fishing.
You heard nothing between 10:30 and 5 in the morning?
Nothing at all.
The door to your garage, is it heavy?
Well, I don't know. I don't drive. I never moved it.
How much insurance did your husband carry?
I'm not sure. I think he said $60,000.
You were the beneficiary?
Yes.
Was there a suicide clause in that policy?
I don't know. Why are you asking me all these questions? Haven't I been through enough? Stop it! Stop!
That will do, Mrs. Fortune. You may step down. I'd like to call Mr. James Trask. Mr. Trask, what is the condition of your business? Financially, that is.
Excellent. We sell stocks and bonds. The market has picked up lately.
Then you would say that Mr. Fortune had no business worries?
Well, not exactly that.
Well, Mrs. Fortune testified that her mother couldn't get her money out of the firm. Is that true?
Yes. As a matter of fact, on the way up, Carl said the only way Ellen could get out was if he were to die.
That's very interesting, Mr. Trask. Did you see Fortune last night?
Yes. I met him at the lodge about midnight.
What was his condition?
He'd been drinking again. I talked to him for a while, then he started to get nasty. I left and went home.
That was the last you saw of him?
Yes. Although I heard him when he came home later. You see, my house is right next to the Fortunes.
What time was this?
Close to 1 o'clock. I heard his car come up the road at a pretty fair rate of speed, past the house and turn into the driveway. Then it crashed into the garage. Carl backed off and tried again. I heard another crash from inside the garage. Then I heard him pull down the garage door.
Is that door heavy?
Oh, I don't know. I've never raised it.
These crashes you refer to, did you examine the car this morning for damages?
Yes. The right front fender was crumpled. There was a mark on the side of the entrance to the garage where he'd sideswiped it.
And the second crash, the one inside the garage?
The left front wheel was resting on a small wooden packing case. The case was smashed. I guess that was the other crash I heard.
Neither one of these would seem to you to be a severe accident, the sort that might stun a man.
Well, I wouldn't think so.
What becomes of your partnership now that Carl is dead?
What do you mean?
Just what I say. What happens to your partnership now?
Why, it goes on. Hazel inherits Carl's share. I'll go on running the business.
With Carl out of the way, do you think Ellen Sisler will want to get out her money?
Just what are you driving at?
Nothing at all, Mr. Trask. You may step down. Mrs. Sisler, you are the dead man's mother-in-law?
Yes.
Were you awake when Carl arrived home last night?
I heard him drive up and bang into the garage, if that's what you mean.
Tell us exactly what you did here, please.
Well, I heard the car coming fast, and then it swerved into the driveway. Then it banged into the side of the garage, what shook the whole house. I listened for a second, and then the car seemed to back up and then drive into the garage. Pretty soon, the garage door closed.
The garage is attached to the house?
Yes, along the west side.
And your room, the one from which you heard these sounds, is that on the west side, too?
No, my room's on the east side, next to Jim Trask's house.
Did you hear anything else at the time the car drove up? Now think carefully.
I know what I heard. Just what I told you. No more, no less.
You didn't care much for your son-in-law, did you, Mrs. Sisler?
I don't know what that has to do with it, but since you ask, no. He was ruining my poor Hazel's life.
Do you happen to know whether the garage door was heavy?
Do I look like the type of person who would know about garage doors?
Thank you, Mrs. Sisler. That will be all. Mr. Coroner, something quite strange has come to light here. There's need for further testimony to clarify the situation. But before we have that, I would like the body of Carl Fortune examined for further injury. I believe he was murdered. Following the re-examination of Carl Fortune's body, Jonathan Keg is going to call another witness, a person who had no connection with the crime, but just happened to be nearby when it was committed. If you should be the next witness called, could you remember what you have heard? It would be vitally important that you do so, for you would hold a life in your hands. You cannot believe in throat tests.
You cannot believe in nose tests.
Decisions recently issued by the United States Government Federal Trade Commission should convince every intelligent smoker that you cannot believe in throat tests, you cannot believe in nose tests. These distinguished government experts, appointed by law to protect the public against false and misleading advertising claims, have declared...
One, there is no reliable basis for claims that one brand is superior to another in respect to throat irritants.
Two, all manufacturers of leading brands of cigarettes buy their leaf tobacco from the same sources.
With these two facts in mind, give yourself Raleigh's famous eye test. Hold up two packs of cigarettes, one of Raleigh's, one of any other leading brand. Turn them around. Take the eye test. You'll see the difference.
Yes, you'll see that only Raleigh's have a coupon on the back. And because Raleigh cigarettes give you rich, fine tobaccos, a smooth, satisfying smoke, that Raleigh profit-sharing coupon is the only real important difference between leading brands of cigarettes. It's a difference you can believe, because it's a difference you can see. So switch to Raleigh cigarettes, America's greatest cigarette value. When the inquest into the death of Carl Fortune was reconvened, it was the coroner who spoke first.
A further examination of the body of Carl Fortune shows that prior to his death, he was struck a blow just below and behind the left ear. The bruise was covered by his hair and was not detected when he was first examined.
Jonathan Keg is called as his next witness, Mary Holden, wife of his good friend, Judge George Holden, with whom Mr. Keg is spending the weekend. Jonathan Keg is beginning his cross-examination.
Mrs. Holden, for the benefit of the coroner's jury, please describe exactly how your house is located with respect to the Fortune home.
There are three houses at that end of the road. They all face the lake.
The Fortune house is the middle one of the three?
Yes. Jim Trask lives on the east side, and our house is on the other side.
On which side of the Fortune house is the garage?
Oh, on the west side, our side.
Where were you last night about 1 o'clock?
I was in bed.
Asleep?
No, I was still awake.
At about 1 o'clock, did a car drive into the Fortune garage?
Yes, I heard Carl come home. He was driving very badly.
In what part of the house was your bed?
I was on the sleeping porch.
Is it an enclosed sleeping porch?
No, just with screens.
How far would you say it was from your sleeping porch to the Fortune's garage?
Well, that's hard to say.
Well, is it a quarter of a mile?
Oh, goodness, no. It's no further away than the end of this room.
Perhaps 20 feet.
About that, huh?
Now, Mrs. Holden, you said that Carl Fortune was driving very badly.
Well, I heard his car come up the road very fast and kind of skid as he turned into the driveway. And then there was a crash. George said Fortune missed the garage, and I said it sounded more like he hit it.
Did he get the car into the garage?
Oh, yes. He got out of his car to see what damage had been done, or at least I assume that was why.
Mrs. Holden, just tell us exactly what you heard.
Well, I heard the car door open and close again, and then the car backed up and then went forward into the garage.
Did you hear the garage door close?
Yes. Yes, I remember that distinctly. It was a few seconds later.
Now think carefully. Between the time the car went into the garage and the time the door closed, did you hear anything else?
No. No, I'm positive I didn't.
You didn't hear Carl Fortune get out of his car to close that garage door?
No.
No, I didn't hear that.
Did you get out of bed to see what damage might have been done when you heard Carl Fortune's car hit the garage?
Oh, no, sir. You see, I can't see the garage from our sleeping porch because of the high hedge that runs between the houses.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Holden. Your accurate memory of what you heard has aided materially in solving a murder. Mr. Coroner, I would like to recall Mr. James Trask. Mr. Trask, were you in bed when you heard Carl Fortune's car turn into his garage?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'd been reading and staying awake just on the chance that I might hear him get home. I guess I was a little worried.
You testified earlier that you heard the car hit the garage. Then there was another crash, caused this time by the car's running over a small wooden packing case inside the garage. Is that correct?
That's right.
That wooden case was found under the car's wheel?
Yes, I saw it there myself.
Which is closer to Fortune's garage, your house or the Holdens?
To the garage? Holdens, of course.
How do you account for the fact that Mrs. Holden, who was much closer to the garage than you, and on an outside porch at that, didn't hear the packing case smash? She didn't even hear the car door open once the car was in the garage.
I don't know. I heard the crash. And after all, we know the case was smashed.
Yes, we do. But we also know that Mrs. Sisler, who was in Fortune's house, didn't hear it. And we also know that Mrs. Holden, right beside the garage, didn't hear it. But it happened. And you heard it.
Now, look here.
Therefore, you must have been closer to that car than either one of the other two.
Well, that's ridiculous. I was at home in bed.
You couldn't possibly have been home in bed and heard what you say you heard.
Maybe I just imagined I heard the box smash.
Oh, no, you didn't. Because the box was actually smashed. You were where you could hear that box smash, all right. You were in the garage.
No, that's not true.
Oh, yes, it is. You thought Ellen's hatred of Carl would make her try to ruin your business. But with him dead, she and Hazel would get a full partner's share and be satisfied.
You're just guessing. You can't prove a thing.
I've just proved that you lied, and I can prove a great deal more.
What can you prove? How do you know this Holden woman isn't lying? Maybe she's deaf for all you know.
We can find that out easily enough. Mrs. Holden.
Yes, Mr. K?
What is your first name, please?
Mary, of course.
Is Mrs. Holden deaf, Trask? Is she?
Why, I... You've got no proof.
Oh, yes, there's proof, all right. You waited till Fortune came home. When his car hit the garage, you went up to the car, opened the door, slugged him, and then put the car in the garage. You hauled Fortune over in front of the wheel, left the motor running, closed the garage door, and went home to bed.
You don't say so.
There's just one thing you forgot, Trask. You testified earlier that you never touched that garage door. But when you closed it last night, you undoubtedly left your fingerprints on the handle.
I did not.
It'll take only a moment to find out.
You'll find nothing. I wore gloves.
Well, you certainly trapped him neatly, Jonathan. But what made you suspect murder in the first place? I would have accepted a verdict of suicide without any question.
Well, I wasn't sure it wasn't suicide, George. But it seemed to me that there were three people who might have wanted Carl Fortune to die.
Mm-hmm.
It was very convenient for them that he died when he did.
Well, when did you know Trask was guilty?
Well, I thought so when Trask said he'd heard the packing case smashed. Mrs. Sisler had already said she hadn't heard that sound. Then when Mary confirmed it, well, I knew. You know, it's a funny thing, but there is almost always a pattern of sound in these cases, which, when properly interpreted, will lead to the truth.
Thank you, Mr. Kay.
Good night, Mr. Wallace.
Good night. And friends, here's a cordial invitation for each of you to be with us next Tuesday, when you will again hear Jonathan Keg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, author of the internationally famous Perry Mason stories and many others. And remember, you can believe your own eyes. So look for the pack with the coupon on the back. Raleigh's Cigarettes, America's greatest cigarette value.
Give me a man who smokes a pipe,
pipe smokers look so masculine, so satisfied.
Satisfied? Yes, especially when they smoke Sir Walter Raleigh. Richer tasting, smoother smoking Sir Walter Raleigh.
And I like the aroma of a pipe.
Aroma? Sir Walter Raleigh is the brand of grand aroma.
Yes. Give me a man who smokes a pipe.
So men, give the ladies a treat. Give yourselves a treat. Light up your pipe with Sir Walter Raleigh.
A Life in Your Hands is produced and directed by Jack Simpson, script by the McKees, with musical effects by Adele Scott, conducted by Whitey Berquist. Jonathan Keg is played by Carlton Cadell. This is Mike Wallace inviting you to be with us again next week when Raleigh's Cigarettes, the pack with the coupon on the back, will again place A Life in Your Hands.
Wednesday brings you Dangerous Assignment and Brian Donlevy on NBC.
Welcome back. Well, remember yesterday I commented on the problem with trapping people in their words for the average detective. Well, it's a little bit different with Jonathan Keg, because he has the advantage of having them under oath, so everything's on the record. And the sound, I think, made for very good detection. So another great episode of A Life in Your Hands. And so far, this is one of my favorite nobody's ever heard of and nobody's ever talked about series that we've been able to play. So I hope you're enjoying it as well. And probably not a whole lot of people heard it relatively, because it was a summer replacement series. And the thing with summer series were that people were away from homes. They were out and about in places where they might not necessarily be able to hear the radio. But definitely a fun concept and pretty well executed. Well, we turn to listener comments and feedback, and we just have this from Nancy, who has our Android app. Thank you for this app. What pleasure to be taken back in time to my childhood. I am 75 years young, and now, thanks to you, a happy child while listening to memories. Blessings. Well, thanks so much, Nancy. Truly appreciate it. And I'm glad you're enjoying the show. We'll be back tomorrow with Let George Do It. And join us next Tuesday for another great episode of A Life in Your Hands. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.